Okay, it's 12:39. You're at the Naturopathic Medical Board meeting, and today is March 14th. Quick introductions. Ms. Sabrina Khan, Assistant Attorney General. Is it Ms. Wilson?
Williams.
Williams. Ms. Williams is here also, Assistant Attorney General. And our Executive Director, Ms. Gail Anthony. And roll call, Gail, when you have a chance.
Dr. Popio?
Here.
Dr. Sadlock?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Rubin?
Present.
We have quorum.
Move on to item number two, declarations for conflict of interest. Anyone have any conflict of interest for what's on the agenda today? Moving on, civility statement. In accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board and carried out its policy in business. Those violating this will be asked to leave the room. Number four, if we could, I'd like to roll 4A through L.
I'll make a motion to approve 4A through 4L.
I'll second that.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion?
Aye.
Motion carries.
So you know what, actually, would you mind?
Want formal?
Roll call.
Yeah.
It's just because we have two people on the phone.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlock?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, we're going to move on to table agenda number five. And we're going to switch these around a little bit border. Is Dr. McCoy here?
No.
Oh, we're on six. I'm sorry. Number six. Both want to come up? Or are you good there? For number six.
Okay. I think Ms. Khan is going to present it for you. So,
do you want to present it for us?
That would be Ms. Khan.
Board members.
Board members, this is case number 17077 and 17078. Dr.
Board members, this is just for clarification purposes. This is a consent agreement for Dr. Ip regarding the certificate to dispense.
Dr. Sadlock, members of the board, my name is Sabrina Khan. And that's correct. So what you have before you is just an interim consent agreement for suspension of a certificate to dispense pending the outcome of the administrative hearing. As you're already aware, Dr. Eep is already under an interim consent agreement for a restriction that's been in place for a while. So this is just another matter that's before the board as Dr. Eep chose to submit an application, renewal application for her certificate to dispense. And it's just for your approval. It's an interim order, of course, an interim order. It's not a final order of the board.
So I'll make a motion to approve.
I second the motion.
So you're approving the interim consent agreement?
Correct.
And if you can do a roll call as well.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlock?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Okay. We'll backtrack to number five. And we'll do these somewhat out of order. So we'll start off with case number 18099. And that's Dr. McCoy. Is he here? Can you give us a little bit of background?
The State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians and Medical Board received a complaint from Carrie Mellon a former employee of Contour Medical, the office of Dr. J.D. McCoy. According to CM, Carrie Mellon, while employed at Contour Medical, she witnessed several OSHA violations. She claims when she tried to speak to Dr. McCoy about the issues, she was told to discuss it with Mr. Curtis, Dr. McCoy's business partner. According to Ms. Mellon, she is a licensed aesthetic with a specializing training in medical aesthetics. A licensed esthetician, excuse me, with specialized training in medical aesthetics, as well as a licensed certified laser technician. According to Dr. McCoy, Ms. Mellon was employed a total of 16 days at his practice. This investigator did receive the report that from OSHA, which Ms. Mellon had also filed a complaint with, and the OSHA report states there were no standards, no violations of the standards were found. There is no evidence to support a violation of unprofessional conduct under the State of Arizona Naturopathic Medical Board Act, and I request the board to dismiss the case.
Is the complainant here? Dr. McCoy, any thoughts you have on this?
The only thought that end up being a benefit from the complaints being filed, and she filed complaints with the Arizona Radiation Regulatory Agency, who came in and confirmed that we were to standard because we had already been inspected a year earlier. She filed complaints with the Labor Board and OSHA. But when OSHA did come in to do an inspection, it actually ended up being helpful because there were a lot of little things that I didn't even know were requirements. And I guess most physicians probably would not know that until OSHA actually did the inspection. So there were certain safety things within the office that we actually improved because of the complaint. So the take home would be I turned it into a positive in that there were actual improvements in the clinical setup after having OSHA come in and do an inspection. Just as an example, I did not know that every clinic is required to have a bloodborne pathogen manual that signs off every single staff member that they've been receiving on-site training or online training for bloodborne pathogens, and making sure that all of that is implemented properly and renewed on a yearly basis. Certain things related to the filling of sharps containers. I'm pretty certain most of us wouldn't even realize that if you look on a sharps container, there's actually a line almost 3/4 of the way down saying do not fill the sharp container above that line. And I didn't even realize that that existed until the OSHA inspector pointed out and said, you know, you want to make sure of these things. So there were actually some positive things that came out of it, although obviously there was a lot of paperwork involved with all of the additional inspections. But everything was passed.
Okay. So you kind of learned something, and additionally you tidied it up a little bit.
Correct.
So I'm going to make a motion that we dismiss this complaint number 18099.
Unless anyone...
Is there any discussion?
Any discussion?
That was my main question.
Okay. And we'll
do roll call. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's move on to case number 18109. And this is Dr. Hobby. Can you come on up for us? Before we get started, is the complainant here?
I'm here. I'm also accompanied by the owner of the clinic. If there's any other additional information needed. Thank you, board.
So 18-109, and Gail, can you give us a rundown on that?
So this complaint was received by patient DS, And their complaint was originally sent to the State of Arizona Attorney General's office regarding a fee dispute. The AG's office took no action on her complaint and forwarded it to our board. Additionally, DS paid for her services with a credit card and then sought to get her money back via a chargeback dispute. She was unsuccessful. According to the complaint, DS responded to an advertisement for Invogue MD viewed on Sonora Living. In review of the Invogue MD website, it appears to be a weight loss hormone replacement clinic. Dr. Annette Hobie is listed as the medical director of the clinic. According to the response to the complaint, which appears to be written by the practice manager, Dr. Hobie does not have any participation in management of the clinic or collect any monies. She is a contracted physician and provides her services to Invogue MD and its patients. Medical records for DS were subpoenaed by this investigator and submitted by the practice manager. They include a patient program agreement signed and dated July 3rd, 2018. According to the records, DS presented to Dr. Hobie on July 12th, 2018 for bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and weight management. She reports having a current PCP and gynecologist. The prior medical records for DS were requested from both of these providers on July 2018 by Invogue MD and are included with the records provided to this investigator. It is unknown when these records were received by Invogue MD, if they were reviewed by a physician or taken into consideration by the physician when forming a patient plan of care. The chart notes for July 12, 2018 do not include a blood pressure, heart rate, temperature, respiration, weight, or height. There is a separate check sheet with these items noted for that date and indicate a B12 injection was given. However, there's no patient name associated with this document. This document does disclose two additional dates, July 16th and July 19th of 2018. A medication appears to have been dispensed on the 16th, however, it's unclear what the medication was. A B12 injection appears to have been dispensed on the 19th, possibly along with six syringes for home use. This check sheet does not disclose who may have provided the injections and the medications. The July 12, 2018 chart does indicate Dr. Hobie reviewed the lab's results from a blood draw done on July 11th. The chart note has an area of checkboxes for systems review, and although some appear to be highlighted and none are checked, it is unknown from this document if these reviews were performed.
Mm-hmm. Can you fill us in?
Well, I will tell you that, you know, that may be something that needs to be addressed. This is how it's attached. This is where the vitals are done by the MA prior to coming to my office. And like you said, there's not an identifier other than it's attached to the chart. The highlighted areas are the ones that were the patient's reported complaints in the review of the systems or patient information. So, I mean, there could be that do a check mark, but usually I just highlight or bold those, as those are what stands out. This patient, the biggest part of the dispute, which I wasn't really discussed, was that they came in and immediately there was an altercation in the office. The man attending her, who has the same last name but it's spelled differently, which is a little concerning, and stuck out to me, came in and was cussing at her. And in the letter that they sent, they'd said that I kicked him out, but it didn't happen that way. They had an altercation the first time they came in, and then she called the office saying she didn't want him to be part of any of her records, and that was a note that was left on my desk. And I've said, of course, we would not give him information unless it was in writing anyway. Then he came with her and immediately started yelling when I said, there's a portion of your intake that you didn't fill out. And it was a questionnaire about last menstrual period, etc. And he said, why didn't you tell us that? And he was yelling, and then he was looking at me, and I said, are you yelling at me? And he said, yes. And so then at that point, he said, this isn't what Shannon told us, which was the salesperson. I went and got her, and then when I came in, Shannon was there also. She kicked him out. She told him to go outside. And he was very elevated, and I asked her at the time, because she said, oh, you would be be surprised. You should hear how he talks to me. And I said, do you feel safe in the home? And she said, well, not always, but that's just how he is. It's more bark than bite, was what she told me. So I kind of made note of it, but that was very bizarre. We tried to accommodate in every way, and actually, she only paid for what she got, to my knowledge. And when I reviewed it, I looked at it. I don't usually do money, but you know, they would. I don't know how else they could have been satisfied other than he was a very angry person, and they asked me if I would write pain medications for them and Xanax, and she was on, and I said no. And they asked me why, and they said, oh, Shannon said you would, and I said, I don't do that. I don't do that here. What I do here is optimization, functional medicine, and that does not include pain medication or anxiolytics.
When someone comes in to the clinic, what's the process? They come in, let's say they want to lose weight.
Right.
Where does it go from there?
So when they come into the clinic, first they're seen by someone who interviews what their intentions are, tells them about what we do, and then they can choose whether they're going to bring in their own labs or they're going to have labs drawn, and all that's done without me. That's part of their program, their thing. What happens when they come in to see me is I get a chart and labs. I do a full intake, review of systems, talk to them about everything, do a general inspection, heart, lungs, things, requisition records, ask questions that might prevent someone from either having hormones or doing a weight loss program, and then I make my recommendations.
So the labs, for example, Access Medical Labs, is that who your company uses?
That's who we use generally, but they can also use Sonora Quest or LabCorp or whatever one they choose if they want to use their insurance for it.
Okay. The Medicare patients, what are you doing with them? Is this self-pay?
They usually either are self-pay or they bring them from their PCP.
And then you run up a plan for them for the weight loss or for the...
Right. With recommendations. Or I'll, if they were waiting records or release, if there's been a cancer or if there's been any type of recent surgery, then that's something that has to be further investigated.
Do you think there's any validity to the varying stories about how labs get covered, how labs get paid for? It sounded like they were saying that they were told labs would be paid for and then they were cash paid.
It's very clear that they're told that labs are included in their initial thing, and then repeated labs are to be either on their own insurance. And there's even something that they sign, and I'm sure it's in there, that says that they're aware that their labs may not be covered by their insurance, because not all labs will cover estriol and estradiol and those kind of things. It depends on what the insurance covers. And so sometimes it's better for them to pay with cash rather than do that, but it's always up to them. But we do make them aware prior to, it's part of the standard written agreement that they initial each box.
So a basic lab is included in the visit, the first lab?
I believe it. It may be, or it may be that it's part of what they pay for. I think there's a $399. You could probably tell them.
It depends on the program and whatever program they choose, and that's what that initial consult is for, is to go through exactly what it is they're looking for and what they want, what their goals are. And so they choose the program, they sign off of it, and there's a list of everything that's included in it. And it's all spelled out, and they go home with that paperwork.
Okay.
So it's part of the reason that we take so much time in that initial consult, so that they understand it. And then they meet with Dr. Hovey, and then we have an orientation that goes back over that information again.
At discharge, once they get done with Dr. Hovey?
Yes.
Okay. So they're pretty clear as to what they're paying for and what they're getting, not only with Dr. Hovey, but at the discharge portion of the appointment.
Yes, we're very clear, but I will tell you, this issue to me was on a completely different level. I think that they were looking for pain meds, and I think that she was, the couple was just very erratic. I mean, they just didn't handle things in a normal way, and I think this is just a tumble of what's coming out of them based on maybe they were shopping for their pain medications. I'm not sure, but it was a really odd situation all the way around.
And You have not seen him since this incident?
No.
Okay. You have basically sent them just a discharge letter?
They quit the program, so they have an option. They can continue, or they can, you know, send in a cancellation, and they canceled, and they didn't have any outstanding money due to them. They just stopped their monthly dues for that.
Were things, I mean, it sounded like things were heated, but it sounded like it got more heated after they essentially left the clinic and then went to see the other physician who made the comment that gets brought up time and time again, that it's as if you were not on hormone replacement. It seems like that really set them off.
I don't believe that. I think that I just don't believe it. I mean, I never got to a point of a review of that dose. When we start a dose, it's always somewhat low and conservative because of the nature of you know, is there going to be tolerance? And that we never even got past a 1 month mark. There's no way you could know if you were on it or not based on that. I mean, there wasn't enough time to actually even review or an opportunity to even review. They bought supplements, they came back in and started, this was the only other time that they came in, and I was not party to that discussion other than I could hear it all the way down the hallway. They came in with a big bag of supplements that they had purchased, and he was with her, and they were very angry, and we refunded all the money, even the ones that were not paid for, the ones that had somehow gotten off of my desk. We gave them all the money back for that, because she was saying, somebody, I didn't want to buy these, and it's like, that's something that was totally elective. It was not, you didn't have to. I always tell people, you can get them here, you can go to Sprouts, you can do whatever you'd like, but these are the things I would recommend for you.
One other thing that I saw that was a little concerning was the pictures they had taken of the prescriptions that came from you guys, that the label was starting to essentially wear off. Is that something you're normally seeing, or something maybe that based on their unique care of the medication?
That's unique, yes. I don't know what where they were stored, or if they were put in a shower or what, but that's not standard.
If when they come in, initial labs, or they can bring in their labs for the initial visit?
Correct, if they're within a timely manner.
Okay. So if you start, and if there are appropriate labs that you need, so if you started them, let's say, on testosterone cypionate, would you make sure that you had the initial laboratory serologies before you started them on the medication?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And cypionate would never be given to a female in my office.
Okay,
it's always a transdermal, low-dose, bioidentical, plant-based hormone cream. So I don't do injections for females.
That's what Bartels had given them.
Yeah, okay. And then if you start them on that, if they decide that they don't want to have follow-up labs, then what do you do at that point?
I don't reissue an RX without a follow-up lab.
Okay.
And usually it's, for women, it's 3 to 4 months. For men, it's 5 weeks.
Okay. And if they say, well, I don't have the money, or my insurance doctor won't pay for it, then you just won't refill the prescription?
Well, then I tell them, this is your other option, is there's cash labs here. We can do this for under this. We do have some pretty affordable labs. And if that's something you need to wait on, then let us know when you are ready.
And if they have an abnormal lab, like this person had elevated serum calcium level, what do you do with that? Do you pursue it, or do you say go back to your primary?
I ask for additional labs, or I would run a parathyroid if it was an elevated calcium to see what's going on. Or I would send them to, if they have somebody that's handling it, if it's been a prior problem.
Okay, so you'd run a PTH and you would pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys run into prior issues between the name of the clinic saying Invoke MD versus our delineation as NMDs?
You know, only recently with this one and a chiropractor that said something about it. And to me, what I thought of when I looked at it is Invoke is the N is in the beginning and then MD. So to me that meant an MD, but it could be misconstrued in many ways. I think that what the MD is intended to say is medically directed. I didn't pick the name, so you could speak to the owner of the clinic about that.
And so you're, are you a private subcontractor? You come in, you see your patient load, you get a check, and that's how it works. Dr. Rubin, any questions? You there?
Dr. Rubin?
Yeah, sorry. Yes, no questions.
Ms. Galvin, any questions?
No.
Seems as if it's more an issue of the patients than the clinic, so.
My only concern is to make sure you're just following, you know, your exams, your labs, if you're prescribed, and obviously you have a system in place before you refill, that you just keep all that succinct to avoid, you know, these types of problems coming up.
Last problem I feel like was about money, which I don't handle that.
Right.
And had there been some return due to them, they would have given it to them.
And the monetary issues, those are pretty much handled by the office staff?
Yes, I never take money. I never, if they ask me a price of something, I tell them I have to ask the front desk because I'm only hired to do the medicine.
Right. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we go ahead and dismiss this case.
I'll second that.
And we need formal.
Let me go ahead and call roll call, please. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadler?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, board.
I'm sorry, Dr. Rubin. Who was your, the owner? What's your name, just for the record?
Jacqueline Olson.
Jacqueline Olson.
Jacqueline Olson, and you're the owner
I
of
am.
The clinic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and just get Dr. Profak going back to work. Case number 18-108, Dr. Profak. So this is case number 18-108, and Ms. Anthony will give us a quick review.
Yeah, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received notice from the State of Arizona Pharmacy Board of an order for cease and desist issued to Vital Force Naturopathic Compounding. Dr. Kenneth Profak is the owner. On August 28, 2018, the board received information from Deputy Director of the Board of Pharmacy indicating that they had received a complaint of Vital Force compounding medications and then selling these medications to other physicians. On September 5th, 2018, a copy of the cease and desist order was sent to VFNC from the pharmacy board that was received by our board on September 5th as well. Included with the order were four pages of what appears to be a list of available items for sale from VFNC. The order outlines potential violations based on information that VFNC is compounding and selling medications without holding a valid Arizona Pharmacy Board issued permit. The order does request Dr. Profak to cease and desist all activity in violation of 32.19.27.03 and further directs that in the event he chooses to resume operations, he immediately applies for the permit. According to an email dated January 17, 2019, received from Deputy Director of the Pharmacy Board, Dr. Profak has stopped compounding and offering manufacturing services. Dr. Profak has confirmed with this investigator he has stopped compounding and offering the manufacturing services. It does appear the jurisdiction of compounding falls under the Pharmacy Board. Dr. Profak was issued an order to cease and desist the practice in which he has agreed to. In the event the Pharmacy Board finds evidence of non-compliance of the order, it would be under their authority to take further action. Case dismissal is recommended.
Dr. Profak, how's that been working? Do you just compound per physician request, or can you stop totally doing it?
No, we have stopped. In fact, Vital Force is no longer an entity. We shut it down. Some people go. Mostly what we were doing is training people. training other physicians how to compound safely. That was included everything from tinctures up to into suppositories, eye drops, nasal sprays, nebulizer solutions, and some injectable items. We have a clean room that we can seat five physicians at a time, and we would do workshops where we would teach them how to use a clean room. We would get them all aseptically certified, which is a standardized test. And then the list in question was a product of a particular class that we had been giving last spring. And in that particular class, if people wanted to make things sort of like a workshop and utilize the clean room that we had to take back to their own patients, then that was okay. And we needed to have some kind of a, we had to have some kind of compensation for that. And that's what that list is. In that particular instance, what happened was a medical assistant from one of the offices of one of the physicians who we do these workshops with used that with one of the local pharmacies to basically accuse them of gouging them with their price for methylcobalamin. And then that pharmacy took issue with that and then sent that list to the pharmacy board. So we have sort of revamped a lot of how we now sort of work that process, in as much as I still compound for my patients. However, the word compound and the verb compounding has been co-opted and now means something different than it's meant in the past. And now compounding is coming into meaning sterile compounding pretty exclusively, and non-sterile compounding is sort of in the domain of what they want to call FDA and pharmacy board mixing and mixtures. And so we're still trying to sort out what that means for our particular patient base. We do IV therapy for patients. We do a lot, probably more than anything, nebulizer type of therapies for our patients. On occasion, a physician will call me and say, hey, I've got a patient who's got disseminated valley fever, whatever. Do you have some glutathione and N-acetylcysteine that I can use for this patient for a nebulizer solution? And generally, we keep that kind of thing on hand, so a physician can call in and we will share some of that with them. Now, should we refer them to a competent pharmacy that's local? Probably, and we didn't really do that. But we were not ever specifically compounding for a particular physician's office, and it was not a situation where they could call us and say, hey, I'd like to have, 10 bottles of whatever. We don't really do that. If I have something on the shelf and somebody calls me, I'll share it with them. But Vital Force itself is no longer a company. I'm trying to figure out, especially with a lot of the legal changes that have happened within compounding and USP 797, how we're supposed to go forward to train physicians to continue to be able to make things for their own patients.
Okay. So you had a sterile hood, or you do have a sterile hood, do you have all the equipment?
We have a clean room. We have three sterile hoods in that clean room. They're certified every 6 months. So as are all of our scales. There is, I believe, and I may be stretching the bounds, I think, but I believe that it is well within the rights of an HPI physician to make things specific to their patient base. And I believe that our certificate of dispense allows for that. It is that there's not necessarily that level of expertise available in the community to be able to do that.
Have you tried at all to interact with the pharmacy board to try to come up with some resolution?
I have. And so what's happened is, you may well know that from 2005 to 2009, I had a compounding pharmacy with a pharmacy permit in Arizona. Sort of the way that came into being is, at that point, Craig Rudbeck was the executive director of this board. And just as friends, he says, have you considered doing that, getting a pharmacy permit? So we did. As you well know, there's been a lot of changes since then, of course, but even then it was that a compounding pharmacy could fill a prescription given for a specific patient, and that's what we did. The problem was that we were making things like glutathione, and glutathione is not FDA approved. And so, and when you make something like that, it takes you as long to make, say, a liter as it does to make 5 liters. And so, so we would make a larger batch for the pharmacy, and then we would move that. The pharmacy board took issues with it, and they said, you need a manufacturing permit for this. So in 2007, we applied for, and we were granted a manufacturing permit for the FDA. FDA came in and they said, your manufacturing permit that we've given you is valid for FDA-approved items. Glutathione, as an example, is not an FDA-approved item. Therefore, it's not covered by your manufacturing permit. Now, in 2008, we disbanded the pharmacy because, quite frankly, it just was not financially sustainable for what we were doing. And so, but I kept the FDA manufacturing permit just because that allowed for a, I guess, a data point on a map to say that, hey, there are certain criteria that we have accomplished. It's no easy thing to get a manufacturing permit from the FDA, and we have adhered to these standards. In as that particular permit persisted until the law changed, and there was a division between 503A and 503B compounders, 503A being traditional compounders, 503B being those who make bulk sterile injectables, not specifically to patients. At that point, I was talking to the FDA because they said, look, your permit has to, you have to make a choice. Is it a 503A, 503B? If it's a 503A, then you go back to the state, you get a pharmacy permit. That didn't work for us. So we pursued a 503B. Here again, though, it did not cover things that were non-FDA approved. So we backed out of that process and just continued to make things for our patient base and then teach other physicians how to make things. And that's kind of where this particular list finds its way to the pharmacy board. In the past, when Hal Wand and Cheryl Frush were executive director and assistant executive director of the pharmacy board, we did have a good relationship. We had a lot of numerous conversations. Miss Anthony and I, we sat in a small room with attorneys in Hal Wand on one January morning in 2015. We had a mutual understanding. There's a new head of the pharmacy board, and I haven't really been able to make much in the way of inroads with them at this point.
Dr. Rubin, you recused yourself last time, correct?
Dr. Rubin?
Correct.
Okay. Ms. Galvin, do you have any questions? Dr. Propha?
I don't.
Okay. If you could work it out with them, that would be great. But I'm going to make a motion that we dismiss this case with Dr. Propha.
I'll second that.
Roll call, please. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin, you're recused, correct?
Correct.
And Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay, let's move on
Dr.
to...
Dr. Sadlick, could you wait just a
yeah.
Thank you.
We'll move on to 5E, case number 19113. And that would be for Dr. Prince. Is she here? Is the complainant here?
Yes.
Okay. Let's have, go ahead and see. So we're on case number 19113 with Dr. Prince.
In February of 2018, Dr. Prince purchased through trustee Eric Haley the assets of the prior office of Dr. Barbara Kudelka, which had fallen into bankruptcy. According to the order approving trustee's motion to sell, the assets included patient records. BK is a former patient of Dr. Kudelka's. Documents BK provided the board regarding this complaint indicate she received an email on 1-9 of 2018 from Dr. Kadelka informing her of the office closure with instructions on how to proceed with obtaining transferring medical records. On or around March 2nd of 2018, Dr. Prince contacted BK informing her she had assumed ownership of Dr. Kadelka's practice and Dr. Benayan could be seen for continuity of care. On or around December 28th of 2018, BK requested her and her daughter's records. The same date, Dr. Prince responded stating the following in part, quote, following bankruptcy proceedings, we were only provided the charts of patients that made it into bankruptcy storage. Unfortunately, not all historic rejuvenation patient charts made it to us, so we do not have your chart in our possession, end quote.
Prince?
Yes.
Any comments that you have?
Yeah, I certainly feel for the complainant and the patients who Dr. D weren't able to provide to them, but unfortunately I was only able to furnish records that I received.
And then you just, did you receive paper charts or they?
Yes, so they were paper charts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they were just out of storage?
They were.
So you're working with the charts, did you, you purchase those charts, right?
I did, so essentially I purchased the assets of the business. So once it went into bankruptcy and went into bankruptcy court, I assumed all of the assets tied to the business.
Okay, and that was patients, equipment?
Exactly, furniture.
Furniture. You still in the same building?
I'm not, so she was, the previous owner was locked out of the building and bankruptcy proceedings take forever, so I wasn't able to move back into the same space because they leased it out. So I'm seeing those patients out of my own practice. I already had an existing practice.
Okay. So you're just working from your existing?
Exactly.
And is this the only patient that's asked you for records?
No, we had several patients. So after I received access to the email, I sent out a mass email to an email list that I received, just introducing myself, notifying patients that I was I had assumed ownership, and I said, if you are interested in receiving the records, I'm happy to provide them. And so that's what we did.
Okay. Were most of them there? Most
yes.
of the charts? Lobby,
yes.
Just a few, but
mm-hmm. just had a handful that weren't there.
And have you just scanned those all, or
yes.
do you still have ice paper?
We actually scanned everything,
scanned
yes.
Okay.
Which is not an easy feat.
No. There's about 700 charges.
Yes, that there. Was it was very challenging.
No, I guess the question, obviously the chart doesn't exist, but I know it's not that hard to get labs and things like that. Do you know what specifically is being requested other than just a chart?
Just the entire chart.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Do you even know when the last date of service to?
I wouldn't know anything about
yeah. okay.
previous services.
Okay. Dr. Rubin, you there?
Yeah, you guys, sorry. I have to go and unmute a locked phone.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Why. Okay. I'm listening along. I don't have anything else.
Okay. All right, Dr. Prince, go ahead and have a seat, and then we'll hear from BK. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Hi. So go ahead and fill us in.
After a year of looking for my medical records and requesting them often. So this is why I filed the complaint.
Can you speak into the mic?
I'm sorry. You know, the letter that I got from Dr. Kadelka was saying, you know, it was a big surprise when she said that Rejuvenature is no longer, that she's filed bankruptcy. She said, we understand the importance of our patients' medical files and history. We value the privacy related to such sensitive documents. As a result, Rejuvenature will retain its patients' files as required under applicable law. I was a patient of Barbara Kadelka's for probably 10 years, so she has quite a chunk of medical records. Over the year, I had been
became my doctor. It was, to me, it was the easiest way to, since she was with the rejuvenator, easiest way to transfer records and continue on with her. So I would ask her, even when I had appointments with her, have you found anything out about my medical records? And the answer was always, no, we're still looking for them. We have a lot of patients and it's taking some time, but please be patient during this time. We're looking for them continually for months. No records are being transferred over to any other practices, so you don't have to worry about your information going anywhere. Not yet. We're still working through logistics. There are many charts. Those were over and over. So I'm trusting that, okay, it's going to take some time. I understand this. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it, mainly. So then, when it, now we're in December, and I'm, you know, I'm losing patience with it. I guess I'm not really believing it now that they, I don't think they're telling the truth, and I don't understand why. So, following bankruptcy proceedings, we were only provided with charts of patients that made it to the bankruptcy storage. Unfortunately, not all historic rejuvenation patient charts made it to us, so we don't have your chart in our possession. So she tells me that in December, so this started in January, and a full year, December 28th is when she said, we don't have it. We sincerely apologize for the inconvenience. It's way more than an inconvenience. And then, to just end it all, she's asking me now, we definitely understand your frustration. The storage facility was located within the warehouse of a logistic company in Phoenix. Once the office was emptied, a bankruptcy trustee moved all the items to this holding facility until the bankruptcy sale was complete. And now she's asking me to contact the court mail to try to locate them in the US bankruptcy courts. I'm not sure about that. I just said, if my personal and private medical recommend patients didn't make it to the bankruptcy storage, they must be physically somewhere. What's my next point of contact? And that was it.
How many years did you, was it 10 years you stated?
And you know what, if I am estimating that, but it had to be about that long. Yeah, it had to be about 2009 when I started with. And you know, I should have went through and got that firm date for you, but I didn't. But it was several years.
And was it primarily you're looking for your laboratories, did you have radiology reports, laboratories that you're primarily looking for?
Yeah, probably mostly that, and all the, all the prescriptions that she's had, all the, you know, she did. I mean, I have a thyroid condition, so that's my, you know, it's nothing more serious than that, but it's still that whole just, I don't know what the word is. Feeling like my stuff is out there somewhere, and where is it? And it's very private. So that's how I'm feeling. And I feel like during the whole process, she never really owned up to that this is serious. I never heard, it was always, good evening, how are you? I'm like, well, I'm not happy. I feel, I don't know the word, violated, whatever, it's not.
Do you have your last set of laboratory serologies that were done by the doctor who had your records?
Do I, for Barbara to cut out,
yeah.
Do I have
so
those?
Someone can work, have you seen the doctor since?
Yeah, I've seen Dr.
Okay. Benign, okay.
Yeah, several times. So yes, she has run since, she has run blood tests and things like that, so she has started, but continually saying, I'm looking for him. Yeah, I asked again. Yeah, instead of just owning up and saying, okay, they're somewhere else, somewhere.
I feel like one of the positions, at least, should be to communicate with the labs or imaging facilities. I guess, is Dr. Kudelka still in practice, or?
No, and just for clarification, I did reach out to Dr. Kudelka and ask her specifically if she still had this file in her possession. She said she did not. I talked to the attorney that was representing the bankruptcy and asked him if he had made a inventory of what was purchased, and it was, his response was, it was just a basic inventory. He didn't do an inventory on patient records. He just said, like, five boxes of records or one chair or one IV pole. It was that simple. So he claims everything that was in the practice location was put into storage, and when it was purchased, it was given to her. So, you know, I don't know what to say to that. I mean, nobody seems to know where these records are.
Certainly understand your frustration. I feel like the wrong person is here in front of the board as far as standing up for where your chart is. You know, I understand where Dr. Prince is coming from, that I got what I got, but I also feel like somebody at least should be able to help you in obtaining those records, or at the minimum, you can set up your own personal account with Sonora Quest, LabCorp, and should be able to get historical records for yourself. That's at least a start. I don't know where your records were run, but you should be able to set up a personal account with those.
I did a lot of things in the lab in her place too. So.
And you can also do that, what Dr. Popper was saying, you can also do that with Walgreens, CVS, et cetera.
Correct.
They can do a medication search for you.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, so that's a good idea. But you understand.
Yeah, I understand your frustration.
You know,
I think he does too.
And I didn't like the fact that it really wasn't truthful for that long.
Right.
And so then, does that reflect on how she's treating people in other areas? You know, that kind of stuff, you know, it's like, it didn't have to be that way.
The only suggestion I could say would be, as much, I know it takes your time, but if you can get a historical perspective from CVS, Walgreens, wherever you got your scripts, compounded pharmacies.
Mm-hmm.
As
Theranos, which is no longer there.
Yeah. Yes.
Lots of it there.
For any, if you had any Sonora Quest or LabCorp, put down besides Theranos. So try to get, you know, a historical perspective. And it's a good lesson for all of us that are in the healthcare system, is if we can keep copies of our labs and radiology reports, it helps. But I do understand your frustration.
It seemed like a pretty simple thing to take care of when you're buying a business.
Yeah, well, I know. That's a thing. Dr. Rubin? Questions?
No, I listened to whatever you said. I thought your suggestions were exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. Ms. Galvin?
I don't really have any further suggestions. I mean, it is concerning. Like, where are these records?
Yes, I agree. Ms. Tibbetts. Thank you. Appreciate it. Dr. Prince? Is there any further assistance you feel you can help her with, or do you feel you kind of covered the gauntlet?
I really do feel like I covered everything that I possibly could. One of the physicians who worked under Dr. Kudelka is actually who she's currently seeing. So that continuity of care was really important to me. That's why I brought on Dr. Vinaya to continue working with me once I acquired the assets of the practice.
Okay. So I'm going to make a motion that we go ahead and make a motion to dismiss this case.
One second, Dr.
Roll call, please. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Anything you could do to assist her would be great.
I'm sorry?
Anything you could do
of
to
course.
Assist her?
Yeah,
helpful.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to, we're still on number five, we're gonna move on to back up to 5A. And that is multiple case numbers. So it's 15034, 16045, 17-075. I guess probably just a three.
I will try. Board members, this is a summary of Dr. Nychiwik's non-compliance of her board orders. So we're looking at non-compliance of consent agreement for restriction and probation regarding board case numbers 15034 and 16045. This was effective August 16th, 2016. Under order number two, she tested positive for alcohol and or drugs on several occasions. That was 2A. Under order 2B, she failed to set up the task appropriate screening schedule, and we are missing task reports. Under order 2C, respondent failed to have Dr. McCune pre-approved when board staff questioned the validity of her provider's license. It was found that this provider was not licensed in the state of Arizona. And we are also missing quarterly reports from the mental health professional. We have non-compliance of consent agreement for restriction and probation regarding board case number 17-075. And this was effective November 30th of 2017 under order 3A. Respondent failed to provide hours for board staff pre-approved and failed to for CME pre-approved by board staff and failed to provide the evidence of the completion of the acquired CME. Under order 3B, she failed to meet the requirement of the ordered board practice monitor. We do have an interim consent agreement for practice suspension. That was effective July 28th of 2018. And respondent was found to have placed two orders with Priospect Bio. So all of this together is falling under the category of unprofessional conduct, ARS 321501NN. And I recommend voting this to formal hearing.
She's not here. She notified the board. She, I guess, is in Vietnam. I'm going to make a motion. We've tried three times, probably more times. It's taken up a lot of the executive director's time, a lot of this board's time, that we move this to formal hearing.
I'll second that.
Can you repeat the motion one more time?
My motion is that we're going to be moving this to formal hearing.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So we need to, the board members, we need to go to further discussion on this.
Mm-hmm.
There's three, okay. So I think we're all in okay. So
roll call, please. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right, that takes us to number, is it seven we're on? This is Dr. Smolinski. Dr. Rubin, you're-
I'm gonna recuse.
I figured you would. So this is for the, basically for regarding her application for renewal of medical license. I make a motion we approve.
I'll second that.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin, you're recused. Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, we're going to move on to number eight. And let's go ahead and this, Nina, is it?
Kamara.
Board members, this is an application for clinical training entry. Ms. Komarov, thank you, indicated an affirmative answer on her application and submitted the required written supplement. Source documents confirmed the DUI incidents. Court paperwork provided by the applicant shows the blood alcohol content for both DUIs.
Do you give us a little bit of background?
So I had my first DUI right after I turned 21. I don't remember all the years. I think 2011. And then my second one was September of 2014, and that one was, for me, my turning point. And, you know, after that DUI, I kind of got penalized pretty harshly. Yeah, that was pretty me. That was my moment in life. That was, like, I needed to change. I needed to do something. And the changes that I made in my lifestyle led me to the naturopathic medicine. So definitely learned a lesson from that.
So it was 2016. Are you currently done with all the various programs?
Yes, I did all my treatments. My time, all the fees, everything's, case has been closed, kind of thing.
Any current problems that you have?
Current?
With
no.
Alcohol?
No.
Those are my main questions. How did this happen twice? So it sounds like you've already addressed some of
the first issues. One I would say was more like a slap on the wrist. I didn't really get much from that, I guess. Being young and stupid, so second one definitely did it.
Dr. Rubin?
No question.
Ms. Galvin?
No question.
I'll make a motion that she be accepted into clinical training.
Second that.
Roll call, please. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. We'll move on to 8B. Is Jennifer Tenson? Is it?
Yes, right here.
Okay.
Hi, it's Tennyson.
Tennyson?
Yes.
Come on up.
Board members, this is an application for clinical training entry. Ms. Tennyson indicated an affirmative answer on her application and submitted the required written supplement. Source documents confirm an incident on 10/19 of 2001 involving possession of liquor as a minor, and an incident on 8/5/2012 for DUI, where she was sentenced to pay a fine for the 2001 incident and 10 days in jail and a fine for the 2012 incident. Records from the nursing board website confirm she does hold an unencumbered RN license as well.
Are you still working? Is that all right?
Yes, currently I do, yes. How old were you at the time of the 2012?
I was 32.
Any issues that you currently have with alcohol?
No. From the incident, I talked to the board at the time. It wasn't a law that you have to go into what is called a can-do program, but I decided to sign up for it anyways. And through the program, I learned a lot about myself. And I'm really glad that that was something that I did, because it showed me a side of myself that I wasn't ready to look at when I initially started. But through the program, it's a 3-year program with drug testing and nurse groups and therapy. So, and I'm glad that I did that.
Do you still stay somewhat active with that, or have you pretty much?
So it's a 3-year program, and so when you get discharged from it, you're done. They do that with you to help you maintain your sobriety throughout the 3 years, and in hopes that you're not going to drink again after that. And I don't, so I'm glad that I did it.
So Motion has been made that we approve you for clinical training. I'll second that motion.
Any discussion? Roll call, please. Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin? Dr. Rubin? Are you still with us?
Yes. Can you hear me say aye? No? Hello?
Is that a yes for the motion to approve?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Now we can.
Yes. Is that a yes for the motion? Thank you.
That is a yes for the motion.
And Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Move on to item number nine. I'm just gonna make a motion unless some of you would like to discuss this. This is the various schools for naturopathic training. So I'll make a motion that we move to approve item number 9A through G.
I'll second that.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Motion carries.
And we're on to item number 10.
Can I ask a question on 9H?
Yeah. What about H?
Do you guys know about the school?
So, yeah, that's for, they are on the list for candidacy. So they've been approved as a candidate. And under our statute, it says we have to approve the ones that are already approved and then the ones that are up for candidacy as well. And that's why I put that one on there. But it's just, they are just a candidate. They aren't accredited yet.
Okay. And we're on to the executive director.
Okay, board members, did anybody have a question about the budget? Licensing and certification numbers, any questions?
How many people do we have currently licensed?
License is 979 with the medical license.
And those are certification numbers, pretty much?
Dispense for profit, 715, not-for-profit, 52. We have 290 clinical training certificates, 19 medical assistants, precept engage is 12, and precept conduct is 21. And I did want to talk just briefly about item C, ARS 324801. This is requiring the board to post on our websites the digital audio recordings of all of the meetings. So I just wanted to make sure that the board was aware that the meetings are being recorded and now they are required to be posted on the website. And then, okay. And so 10D, any questions on the dismissal of the case?
Can I digress to 10C? When do those go up for?
Oh, I'm sorry, January was the first month.
January? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any future agenda items? Anyone else? Okay. So I'm going to do call to the public. Anyone out there that'd like to speak, we're going to go ahead and give you 5 minutes. We probably can't make comment, but we can put you on the agenda for next time. Any items? Anything else? No. Okay. So it's, Ms. Anthony, anything?
Mm-hmm.
1:48 and it's record time. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Thank you, Ms. Gallen.
Thank you.
Thank you.